Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I'm Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast with Seth Payne this morning. Having a good time here for the rest of the week. So we'll bring in Friday together again, Seth, man. It's been a lot of fun the last couple of days and getting a lot of reaction with you guys. 713-572-4610, 572-4610. Somebody just text in from the 281, Seth. Astros are on Apple TV tomorrow. I don't want to subscribe. Annoying. That's the only way to watch game two of the opening series. I co-sign that. I guess if you're going to do it, get it out of the way early.
It's so hard whenever you have to watch your team play with a different broadcast than they're used to. And I know that like some people will sync up the audio and the TV. It's just I can't keep track of all of that. I get it. I understand it. But this early in the season, I don't like it. We were just complaining about having to watch things on streams. Some of the streams are better than others. I feel like Apple TV does a really good job on the technology side of things, but they've tried to get a little too ambitious at times in trying to make the broadcast feel different than your normal broadcast. Last year, it was more normal than it was the year before. I'm okay with it. I'm not gonna let it ruin my opening weekend. Damn it!
Right? Yeah, I don't have to worry about it personally. I'm heading out there tomorrow, so I'm excited about that. I haven't been to an Astros game since 22. I'm pretty crazy. Meanwhile, the Rockets taking care of business last night. I want to talk about this one. This was the most fun I've had watching a Rocket game in probably at least 4 years, Seth. And I think it's not to be understated that last night's win was maybe the most important, impactful victory for the Rockets in at least that amount of time. Because, obviously, of what's at stake, the opportunity that they have in front of them to be that 10th and final seed, at least, even if it works out that way, and get some postseason experience for some of these younger guys. And you know, look, we've been watching it over the course of the last couple of 3 weeks, the emergence of Jalen Green, and it was on full display last night. 37 points, Amen Thompson, career-high night, 25 points, 15 boards, big-time shots by Dylan Brooks in overtime, Jabari Smith hitting the shot of his life towards the end of regulation, a corner three that was contested. That was badass. And Jalen Green, by the way, had an OMG three in overtime, and then followed it up with a circus layup in the lane. It was just, you saw everything that you wanted to see, that you've been waiting to see from all of your guys in a big-time moment, a big-time game, in the middle of the best winning streak that your organization's had in years.
I think that in the biggest thing, in terms of the evolution of Jalen Green, was everything that Oklahoma City was doing to him last night was the kind of stuff that you would have pointed to a couple months ago and said, well, I mean, he's got to learn how to handle it when he's the focus of the other team's attention, you know, or it was the excuse that you would make that, like, well, you know, it's not really his fault when everybody's just, they're bracketing him, they're blitzing him, they're doing all these things. Like last night was when you saw all of that just flipped on its ear, where he's making all the right decisions. When he's supposed to kick it out, he's kicking it out. When he can take it himself, he's taking it himself. And on a night where, you know, they were, Jalen Green was, nobody was hitting threes. Like Jalen Green was the efficient guy out there. And he hits that to Smith. The Smith's three was the first one he'd hit all night. Like, just having trust in his guys, and I think his guys having trust in him, that was the word that kept circulating afterwards in all the interviews and the players were giving it, you know, just talking about the trust they have for him and that it's obvious that he trusts them. It all comes back to Doka at some point. It's long, it's painful, and it took a lot to get to this spot, but it's just nowhere near what you thought it would have been almost at any point up until a month or so ago that you'd be telling this story about Jalen Green.
Yeah, you mentioned the Rockets and their three-point shooting last night. It's not very common when you're struggling to hit those shots, especially if you're the Rockets, that you come out with a win like that. I mean, they took 43 threes. They made 15 of them. They took 43 to get there. I mean, 35% nearly. It was a lot better late because, look, you had the two big ones by Brooks in overtime. And Jalen Green, just, there was one, I think it was like around the two-minute mark of the fourth quarter. He didn't have numbers. He was kind of on a breakaway. He just said, screw it, I'm going to pull up and just let it roll. And it was nothing but net. That was fantastic. He did almost a similar thing in overtime. And you talk about making the right decisions. The attention that he got on that drive to the lane in the waning seconds of the fourth quarter, he drew three defenders his way before kicking it out to Jabari for that corner three. That was huge. That was huge. And you saw, you talk about decision making, that right there versus what he almost did just moments later when he attacks the bucket and the defense collapses. It's like he has four guys on top of him and he almost gets that circus shot to go and it just rims out. I mean, that was the best version of Jalen Green. That was the one that we've been wanting to see and we got it. And I don't know that it's going to go anywhere, to be honest with you.
It's probably, this has been the most engaging, maybe like the duo, it's been a unique form of engagement. Like this duo of the Rockets all of a sudden surging. And well, at the same time, you've got the Cougs in the tournament. And it's no surprise with the Cougs, obviously, but it is very much a surprise with the Rockets. It does feel like all of a sudden basketball was just dumped onto the city like a tropical storm in terms of just like how much emotion there is about it. It feels like a throwback week in some respects.
Yeah.
Because of the dual action of both the Rockets and the Cougs.
Well, I think it's a pretty good analogy, how basketball's been dumped on the city like a tropical storm. That's kind of the way it goes around here in Houston, right? Where you go through a 2-3 month heat wave and the drought, and then you get a bleep ton of rain like all at once. Like we haven't had anything to be proud of by way of our Rockets in years. And now when you think you can count them out, I mean, I said this and I don't think that I was in the minority at all. Like a month ago, Seth, when Alpi goes out, when Whitmore's out, I said, they're effectively done for the season. You know, you're without three of your better young players. There's no way in hell. I mean, at the time the Rockets were 6.5 games behind the Warriors for that 10th seed. And I said, man, these guys are just going to mail it in. I mean, there's not going to be any fun basketball to watch now. And then I couldn't have been more wrong.
You put a tombstone on the cover of the Chronicle.
I did. R.I.P.
season. Yep. That's what you did. And look what this hath wrought. I think that with the NCAA, like obviously basketball has changed a lot in the last couple decades. I think the interesting thing about the Cougs is that they have been like, they've reinvigorated college basketball through the regular season. Like in the midst of all of this, in the midst of NIL, and just like how early guys leave for the draft and all of that, college basketball has changed a lot. but they've managed to actually turn that into a super, super relevant and like the hip place to be for a lot of people in a way that I don't think I don't think they experience basketball like this in a lot of places anymore. So that part's been really cool. And you've done it with a throwback coach in the midst of all this newness.
In a major city to boot, right? Yeah. You know, when you've got the three major sports going and you have a major league soccer team too, and your college basketball team is, you're right, a place to be. I mean, that is one of the most electric environments. That's the loudest 7,000 fans I think you can encounter almost anywhere. I haven't been a lot of places like that, but it's certainly one of the most vibrant atmospheres for any sport, to be honest with you.
What were they doing? What was the basketball team doing when you were an undergrad?
We were competitive my senior year, my junior senior year, so 2005-06. I remember the biggest game that we had in town when I was at U of H. I think it was Kentucky had come in, and I want to say we lost, but it was a really good game. And that was kind of like if the Cougs would have beaten Kentucky at that point in time, it would have been like, hey, here we are. You know, we break into the top 25, that whole thing. And it just, I don't think it happened, because if it would have happened, I would have been like one of those knuckleheads that rushed the court, and we didn't do that.
You were in that that Tom Penders era, right?
Yeah. Right. I think it was in the heart of Tom Penders.
He made the tournament in his final season as a coach. And that was 2009, 2010. So you were gone for a few years by then.
Yeah.
As far as Jalen Green goes, I think he's going to be a guy you have to invoke from now on when talking about taking your time with a developing young player. And obviously, with guys coming to the league as young as they are, there's still a pretty good correlation. Like, usually the guys that are going to be good are definitively good by the time they're 21 or so. But he'll be the cautionary tale the next time there's somebody that you just feel like is never going to get it going. With like Kareem Jackson, he's a bust. It's never going to work out. And then all of a sudden he flips it around. That would be the football example. The baseball example, the biggest cautionary tale is JD Martinez. Because you didn't even actually give him a chance to really turn everything around. But Kyle Tucker is the one that, remember, was untouchable. People couldn't figure out why he was untouchable. What the hell's why is Kyle Tucker such a big deal? And then people barely remember that they ever felt that way right now.
Yeah.
I know for a fact nobody listening right now remembers that they were wondering why Kyle Tucker was untouchable long ago.
Yeah, and there was about 3 years in a row, I felt like, where the Astros had those prospects that, you can't touch that guy. Kyle Tucker was one of them. I think the other two probably ended up becoming Astros. I feel like George Springer was probably in that conversation at one point in time, and maybe somebody else. Once upon a time ago, I guess it was Forrest Whitley. Not so much.
Let's see.
Now.
Kyle Tucker was, it was like 2017, back when there was the trio of untouchables, with Kyle Tucker being the first and foremost.
Yeah, that's the era, I guess, I'm thinking of. That's around that time. It's Tucker, well, 7 years ago.
The thing about Tucker was that, remember, AJ Hinch, I can't remember the word he used, but basically, it was the level of urgency. He said that Kyle Tucker just didn't have the same level of urgency as the other guys. And it took a couple years for Tucker to realize that he had to kind of match pace with all of those other guys. And I do like last year, where the one thing with Tucker that was weird was he took a step back defensively. And that's almost the part where Espada has very much focused on getting back to being a really good defensive team. Like, that was one of the hidden ugly parts of the Astros last year that kept them from being peak Astros was that they weren't a good team defensively, like they almost always are. The base running errors, Espada has very much thrown himself into correcting a lot of the base running errors. Pitchers holding guys on base. He's very much emphasized some of the basics that I'm not trying to criticize Dusty for it or what have you, but it's, they were either errors or mistakes or bad parts of the game that either went unaddressed or definitely uncorrected that I'm hoping that Despota makes a difference.
Yeah,
and that includes Kyle Tucker defensively.
I think, you know, the vibe that I've gotten from Joe Despota, and, you know, we've got a long season to see this play out, is that he's trying to be like a mesh point between the analytical side of things and just getting guys back to optimizing their instincts and playing baseball like the way that they know how. And
yeah,
and I guess I've gotten a lot of that from the language that he's used and how he's talked about being more aggressive on the base paths and more aggressive just in the game in and of itself. And then you go back to the, what was it, game five of the ALCS, you know, when he made the decisions after Dusty Baker, you know, got ejected. I stand by this. I will die on this hill. I think he told Jonathan Singleton to go up there, and if he'd swung a pitch, he would punch him in the throat. You're going to take this walk, and you're going to like it, and we're going to win this ball game. And ultimately, you know, it worked out, and that's the one kind of harrowing moment that we are looking forward to seeing much more from Joe Despota in 2024.
I'm with you in that some of the stuff with Dusty last year got overblown. I thought there were times where when Dusty was having to deal with injuries that there just flat out wasn't a solution to some of the issues on pitching, or sometimes in shuffling the lineup around. He was going to be damned if he did and damned if he didn't. I think the biggest difference probably is just in not the game by game decisions per se, but the overarching, like, okay, why is Maldonado catching as much as he is? It's one thing yes, to keep Maldonado as the starter, but my God, he's an old man, you know, and it was getting painfully obvious how old he was as the season went along. He can't move the way he used to move. I'm cool. I would have been cool with him just keeping Maldonado as the full-time starter, but just put Yiner in there more, please.
Yeah.
Don't act and then act like Yiner after a layoff should come in and be as sharp as ever.
By the way, have we seen a recent picture of Martin Maldonado as a member of the Chicago White Sox and potentially how pissed off we're going to be whenever we do see one Martin Maldonado like 25 pounds lighter in shape?
Did he lose 25 pounds?
No, I'm saying how pissed you're going to be if he did.
Okay. He says a year ago he claimed that he had lost 25 pounds. Remember, he showed up, and then I feel like...
It wasn't last year. Definitely wasn't last year.
He showed up looking a little bit different. It was, March 17th, 2023. Martin Maldonado says he lost close to 25 pounds. He did. He was more fit.
I don't remember that.
I know it didn't. It's not like it showed up to any particular.
Now look here. You read between the lines, Seth. Yes, yeah. I lost 25 pounds at some point this offseason.
At some point.
However, you know, that taco stand down the road, man, that gets me at like late at night coming home from these ball games. He probably put that right back on.
At one point, he said he lost 17 pounds last year. So the story's already starting to show some
shady
cracks.
Yeah, shady. Yeah. Don't believe it. And something probably had to do with the fake hair that he was rocking around the same time Framber was rocking the fake hair. How heavy were those extensions exactly? A lot of questions. I don't believe it. I need to see him in a White Sox uniform.
Did Maldonado have extensions for a while last year?
Yeah, I thought he did. If it wasn't last year,
God,
it was...
I completely forgot about that.
I thought he did. I could be wrong. I don't know. Time is a warp. He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani at Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, we'll stick with a little baseball, get you ready for opening day, and get you this. Astros, they need to make sure of just one thing and one thing only this weekend. We'll have it for you next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I'm Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast with Seth Payne this morning at Sports Radio 610. Ben Gary producing. We'll get to the Astros here just momentarily, Seth, but I neglected to get to my main point the last segment. I just wanted to make about the Rockets and what the situation currently is. I said, you know, is it too little too late for Houston right now? And I get they're only a game behind the Golden State Warriors for the 10th and final seed in the Western Conference. But, you know, as inconsistent as the Warriors have been of late, they do have one of the easiest schedules remaining in their final 10 games of the regular season. And it's not because I'm hinging or hanging my hat solely on this, but I do think there are similarities, and we've seen them much more so from the Golden State Warriors over the course of literally years, as opposed to the Rockets during this last couple of 3 week stretch, where they've played very well with a chip on their shoulder. They've played very well with their back up against the wall. They've played very well when they've brought a little nasty and kind of let Dylan Brooks and his attitude and his demeanor, the way he plays, rub off on him a little bit. Draymond Green might very well be doing Draymond Green things, but we've seen how before in the past it has, you know, kind of sparked the Golden State Warriors. And not necessarily saying that they need that, but because it's an easier schedule, because they've been playing a little bit better here of late, because Draymond Green got ejected last night and the Warriors found a way, again, to blow the brakes off of somebody despite his absence. That's kind of like where I'm at. Too little, too late. You have to, by the way, make up two games over the course of the next 10, because you don't own the tiebreaker against the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors do. They beat you two games to nothing already. And, you know, you play them on Thursday, win, lose, whatever the case may be, doesn't make a difference. You've got to beat the Warriors by two games.
I think, and I guess that the whole, when you say, is it too little too late? Because I saw the one person you're addressing who he says he loves you, but he thought that when you teased, was it too little too late, that you, he almost seemed personally insulted by that. No, it's that they have to continue to get better. I would say like the level of improvement that they made and not losing to it. They haven't lost to a team with a losing record since before the All-Star break. So like they've been very good at beating up on lesser teams during this softer portion of their schedule.
Yeah.
Last night was a big step because that's a bona fide contender that you beat in overtime, but you still face the Mavs, you know, you still face the Warriors, obviously, you still face the T-Wolves, and that's all just in the next three of the next four games. So there's a, like they have to make what they did last night the absolute standard and do it better and be better down the stretch than the Warriors, right? So yeah, I 100% think you're correct in asking, okay, was that run that they just went on, was it too little too late? Because they don't have much room for error whatsoever right now.
Yeah, and look, that's the corner that they've kind of painted themselves in, but I think we're all here for it, right? Better late than never in this situation, because like I'd said earlier, I think before the season started, the anticipation is that they are in the mix. Kind of like I said before the Texans season, you know, I would be disappointed if, you know, come week 14, 15, the Texans were not one of those teams on the far right side of your television set that said in the hunt. I fully expect them to be there, and damn sure if they weren't there, but then ended up being division champs and making some noise in the playoffs. And I maybe that's something that the Rockets, you know, can give us. And maybe.
No, but you're saying that when you get to next year, I'm sorry, you're saying at the beginning of this year, you expected the Rockets to be in the mix?
Yeah, I did. I expected them to be one of those teams in the hunt. I honestly expected them to be doing what they're doing this year, last year.
Mm-hmm.
I really expected that because I thought the talent was good enough. They weren't deep. They didn't have enough veteran, more like reliable, you know, veterans. They didn't have any shooters on the team last year. And like, I still don't know that they have enough shooters on the team this year, but they're finding ways to, you know, score when their shots aren't falling from the perimeter. And I think last night was a really good example of guys like Jalen Green kind of putting his head down and will almost willing at times the Rockets to score on possessions in which maybe they had no business scoring, but they made some very difficult shots. They missed some very difficult shots, but it comes down to that what we've been looking for, the young guys growing up a little bit.
Yeah. What was the win total? You should have. I know you're not a gambling man per se, but I mean, the win total was 31.5 points going into this season. That was a
wins. Yeah,
you were 31.5 wins. Yeah,
I took the over. There,
yeah. That's I'd been burnt out and frazzled enough on the potential and the upside of some of the younger guys. I was very optimistic that it would be a different type of struggle just because Udoka is, I think, that good of a coach. The inconsistencies that you saw during the year, weren't a surprise. The fact that they became so much more of a professional looking basketball team in this last month is what, like, I wouldn't have expected it to look quite like this, obviously, because you're doing it in a different way than you would do if you had your preferred big man in there.
No question. Just want to correct something that I'd said that I'm sure maybe strikes people the wrong way. I said the Rockets need to beat the Warriors by two. I meant to say they need to make up two games on the Warriors.
Yeah,
because if you're tied, you don't win the tiebreaker with Golden State. I said one thing the Astros need to do this weekend that we absolutely need to see. I lied to there. I need to see two things. The first thing is maybe not necessarily the most important. I need to see Jeremy Peña go deep. This guy, I just saw these numbers this morning. It's been 358 at-bats, including spring training at-bats. Since he's hit his last home run. And I didn't double check this date, but I think it's been since like early July that he's hit a home run.
Yeah. It's been a long, long while.
I need him to go deep.
Look, Sean, he's altered his little hover step yet again, and he's got the bats still. There's just less wasted motion. It's everything that he learned last year in terms of better judgment at the plate in some respects. You know, he improved in a lot of aspects except for the damn just hitting the ball really, really hard part of it at the right launch angle. So I feel confident. This is where I go back to Vegas or some of the just like the handicappers or some of the stats people on some of this who tend to sometimes be way less pessimistic about your own team's players than you are. Than I would be. And like, they tend to be pretty confident in Framber and they tend to be pretty confident in Jeremy Peña's long-term prospects. I think they, once he's shown his upside and what he can do, it's a matter of just ironing out of a lot of these smaller things. And I feel really good about Jeremy Peña. Like, if I were to take the two guys who are sore spots in the lineup last year who played below expectations, there was Jeremy Peña and there was Jose Abreu. So there's reasons for optimism for both of those guys. The difference is that Jeremy Peña is still a very young man, whereas Jose Abreu is likely to have more soft tissue issues and lingering injuries and all that stuff. I feel like at the end of the year, we're more likely to still be frustrated with Abreu than Peña.
Before I get to the other thing that I need to see this weekend, I'll give you this. I think betting on Jeremy Peña to hit a home run is a great value bet until he does. The prop for him hitting a home run tonight is +700 right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hell of about value.
Take it, Sean. Do you believe or don't you believe? Damn it.
It's just about the value.
Mouse or a man?
I could believe or not believe, but it's good value. So I'm taking
it. Is it a good value?
Yeah, +700.
It's really hard to hit a home run, man. Especially
he's
when
due.
You haven't done it in a long time.
He's due.
Yeah.
All right. If I had the means to do so, I'd lay $100 down every time until he does and the odds go down. Honestly. All right. The other thing that we need to see, I think you and I agree on this. I don't need to see a series sweep, but I really just, it's for today. Just win this ball game. Win this day game at home and get that monkey off of your back. And rid yourself of, you know, being that team that can't win baseball games at home in your friendly confines. And please do so against the New York Yankees, with or without Gerrit Cole, damn it. I need to see that happen today.
Yeah, that's the conundrum and the weirdness of not winning at home in the last series he played, which is just way too much symmetry to various World Series and that we've had in the past. I think the Yankees might be the best team to get this out of your system. This is a team that you've had some incredible moments at home in the playoffs and in the past that it's weird, but in a lot of ways, the Yankees are your homecoming team. You schedule the homecoming team that you're most likely to have success against, and I think the Yankees are your homecoming team in this instance. That's what they've become, damn it. They're like they're the A's when the A's aren't available anymore. I need a team that I can come in and justifiably and understandably whip up on. Yes.
Yeah. Has that been the case with the A's for the Astros the last couple of years? I feel like that's actually been a more competitive series.
The A's have been pluckier than you'd expect at times.
Yeah.
Over the course of the past decade.
I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, too, to watch is that Aaron Judge is going to be moving to center field. God, I wish we still had Talz Hill out there. That'd be awesome. It's just to watch Aaron Judge try to navigate that thing and bash his big head into that stupid light pole. But that does also mean that we don't have the advantage of him being terrified of Minute Maid's right field wall. It was there was always something about right field there just after he hurt his shoulder on it that day a few years back that he looked a little bit hesitant towards it. And people in New York would try to heap praise upon him as he would just put his hand in the air and make a catch a foot in front of an incredibly short right field wall. He doesn't have that faux heroism anymore that he can bank on.
For a different reason.
Center field at Minute Maid's going to be miserable for him.
For a different reason than you, I do actually miss Talz Hill. I was in the minority on that one. I wish they'd never gotten rid of it. Two of my favorite catches on that hill were by way of the Astros. Lance Berkman fell on his butt on top of the hill making a catch, and then Biggio miraculously somehow made a catch on the hill when they asked him to play center field for some reason years ago.
My stomach just started tightening up even just thinking about those two guys. There were never the injuries that you thought there were going to be. It just looked like such an inherently dangerous thing, except that it wasn't the injury risk, really. It was just the gimmickry of it. It was just that it was so... It was so cheesy, like that you constructed the hill. If they had left an existing hill or something, then it makes sense. But you constructed a hill to commemorate.
It was an ode to an old ballpark, man.
Yeah, I know. But I like my odes to be just naturally occurring.
He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. Coming up next, final segment of the show. And by the way, I do want to remind people that are driving out and about. In the loop today with Landry Locker and John Lopez. It's a road show. They'll be broadcasting from Tom's Watch Bar 10 until 2. Tom's Watch Bar located at 1201 Caroline Street in H-Town. If you want to swing by there, enjoy the show. They'll get you ready for opening day as well for a 3:10 first pitch. Coming up next, our last segment, some drama, news of some drama at the NFL owners meetings. We'll have the details for you next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
And for Sean Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani, Seth Payne. Sports Radio 610's In the Loop with Landry Locker and John Lopez coming up at 10. They'll be broadcasting from Tom's Watch Bar for the show today. From 10 until 2, Tom's Watch Bar located at 1201 Caroline. They'll be getting you ready for Astros opening day festivities. Pretty sure it'll be popping down there downtown. My man PC was on Fox 26 with Nate Griffin this morning in the ballpark and said the stadium's already kind of buzzing with workers and people getting things ready for the 3:10 first pitch. So it'll be fun. Fun day.
Yeah, it's going to be this is just turned into a rite of passage every year that's got a different feel to it than it had for a long time. It's been really cool. It's been really cool just over the past. I remember when the Astros were going on their stretch of winning on opening day, like going back to, they had a weird stretch. It was like 2013, 2014, 2015. I think it was in 2014 that Jeff Luhnow had tweeted out something after one of those victories, like, yeah, this team's going to win a lot of games a lot faster than anybody realizes. And he was largely mocked for that.
Correct.
By the end of 2014.
Yeah.
But he was just a year early on it. He was a year early on it.
He was right, though. Ultimately, yeah. He was absolutely right. This may or may not be right. There was a report that Jets head coach Robert Saleh and Jets owner Woody Johnson were in a quote-unquote heated conversation. It was first brought to our attention by way of Colleen Wolf of the NFL Network, correct?
Yeah, yeah. She was on the Around the NFL podcast with Greg Rosenthal, Dan Hanzus, and Mark Sessler, and she just kind of dropped this. She didn't even drop it like a report. This is Colleen Wolf talking about an exchange between a couple notable league personnel at one of these receptions at the owners' meeting.
I will say that from a very reliable source,
ooh,
at the owners' meetings, there was a very heated conversation between Woody and Robert Saleh to the point where it was a little awkward.
Spicy.
What were they arguing about?
Well.
And that's it. And that's it. That they were having some kind of an argument. Like, obviously, there's plenty of things they could be arguing about, probably involving Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. The Jets have been both a mess and yet intriguing. I'm more intrigued and bullish on the Jets than I think a lot of people are. I'm not one bit surprised if Woody Johnson, who's been reported to be a guy that kind of has rabbit ears when it comes to not just hearing what people say about them, but like being on social media a lot, will bring social media comments up to Robert Saleh. I like to think of this as potentially like a whole bunch of volatility that leads us into an incredibly dramatic 2024 season.
Yeah. Colleen Wolf might have gone too far. According to a Twitter post from Connor Hughes of SNY.TV, he says there was no verbal argument between Robert Saleh and Woody Johnson at the owner's reception. Said, quote, "I know because I was at the party where this apparently happened." Feet from Saleh and Johnson. Before Johnson and Jets contingent left, Woody took him out to dinner, checked in with two sources at the dinner, confirmed nothing happened there either, end quote.
Okay, listen, I don't know what Connor Hughes is trying to pull, but there's more than one event at, like, I don't know who's, who he's trying to massage their ego or what have you. But there's more than one event at the NFL owners meeting that might involve Robert Saleh and Woody Johnson both being there. And like, is he claiming that he was standing next to these guys the entire time? Like seeing that I was at the party where this apparently happened, feet from Saleh and Johnson before they left.
Yeah.
So apparently he had eyeballs on Woody Johnson and Robert Saleh the entire time. It's also a little confusing because, and maybe this is all you have to say about Colleen Wolf's quote unquote report, is that she switched up in the telling of this story and in the conversation. In one spot, she said it was on one night, and then in another spot, she said it was on a different night. So either maybe she and Connor Hughes aren't on the same page, or she actually didn't get all the details from this source. And she also got it from a source as opposed to Connor Hughes, who was there. Damn it, Connor Hughes.
She made it sound like it was going to be so juicy. Well, I heard from a very reliable source.
It seems like from the music there that there were maybe on the podcast that they were just having some fun, like talking about juicy gossips or something.
Yeah.
And that this got picked up by aggregators and wasn't meant to be quite as salacious as it looks in print. They sounded like they were having fun with it more on the actual podcast.
Aggregators.
I don't know if I look at the owners and coaches in Houston right now, I'm not really worried about this happening. Crane, I could see getting into it with anybody, like not in a bad way, just but he and like, if we go to the players, Verlander and him are pretty tight. I could see them getting into an argument over golf and it being no big deal.
Did you hear Adam Spillane yesterday on In the Loop? I think he was on like their second or third segment of the show, something like that, and talking about Joe Espada. And Spo was kind of dropping the knowledge on what to expect from Espada and, you know,
yeah,
characterized him as a very fiery, in-your-face guy. I could totally see Joe Espada, Jim Crane, having a pretty good go at it on a disagreement. But to me, the leader in the clubhouse, if you will, would be Ime Udoka and Tillman Fertitta. Just for nothing more than, while Ime can be a very quiet, soft-spoken kind of a guy, I feel like he's also, too, an individual that has can pin up a lot of built-up anger and would probably, I could see him unleashing on Tillman Fertitta, Rafael Stone.
I could totally see Udoka having an issue with an NBA executive of some sort, but I could also see it being with an owner, where it's more just no big deal necessarily. It's just that that's peak alpha right there. When alpha meets alpha, sometimes it doesn't always, you know, go all that smoothly. Or a guy, like, they're going to get their opinions out there. I feel like Fertitta and Udoka could have at it and then just go have a steak afterwards and be no big deal. Like, they could argue and shout at each other for 2 hours and then be like, with no issue at all, be like, okay, you want to go get a steak? And like, yeah, let's go. And they go and they have a nice evening.
I have to imagine a lot of that maybe potentially pent up anger has gone by the wayside now for Ime during this 10-game win streak for the Rockets. He's probably enjoying himself a lot right about now.
Well, and they did. I think that the organization itself didn't, you know, it doesn't appear that they gave Udoka any edicts into how to handle all of this. And Udoka was handling it differently than a lot of us armchair warriors would have had him handle it.
Jalen Green, case in point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that those two, I could see kind of like how various John Harbaugh's talked about this with the Ravens a lot. Like he and Ozzie Newsome used to just, they'd butt heads a lot and they'd battle, but it wasn't really a big deal. They weren't like arguments. They're arguments, you know? So I could see that. Cal's pretty much given coaches and GMs a lot of runway to do what they want. And so I would have a hard time seeing Cal. I really couldn't see Cal and either D'Amico or Nico, or D'Amico or Nick Caserio, get into it like this. Mostly, I mean, for a lot of reasons. I don't think the personality types are the same as like a Woody Johnson and a Robert Saleh.
I think probably the most famous coach owner, most documented battle would be Steinbrenner and
Billy Martin.
Billy Martin, right?
The multiple,
and Steinbrenner and anybody, really. But yeah. Steinbrenner and
but
Martin.
But especially Billy Martin, because he's just like, they had such a long relationship and he fired him so many times.
Yes.
And it just like, that's, yeah, I don't know if there's ever been as dysfunctional yet still productive relationship in sports quite like George Steinbrenner and Billy Martin. I mean, that was like the late night television joke of our youth, wasn't it? There's always some joke floating around about George Steinbrenner firing Billy Martin.
Yeah.
And it was back when, like, that's all you got was 3 minutes on the sports at night on the news. You didn't even have ESPN at that point. They'd figure out a way to make fun of that relationship.
It's because it happened with just more people than the manager, too. A good friend of my grandfather's a long time ago, a long time Yankee executive, traveling secretary, and assistant to the owner. He got fired multiple times. We'd see him at baseball dinners and reunions over the years, and he would tell stories about getting fired in the morning and then George calling up and making
really?
With him in the afternoon. Yeah.
It was like one of those. So that was Steinbrenner's go-to. It might have been was it just that Billy Martin was the only person that took him seriously when he got fired? Five times that Billy Martin was either fired or pressured to resign.
Billy was a character too. So, I mean, it was just good entertainment. And you know, he was obviously more of a public figure than, you know, other executives within the Yankee offices. So that's the most famous one. And I'm always intrigued by the relationship, especially when times are not so good, as they weren't here for a few years most recently. What those conversations must have been like between, Bill O'Brien, Cal, Cully, Cal, Lovey, Cal. You know, it's kind of fascinating. And if it wasn't Cal, you know, if it was Hannah or whoever. Just
well, O'Brien, you know, O'Brien's like multiple different people from the Texans organization at various times over the past 10 years or so they've used the word complicated with Bill O'Brien. O'Brien was a guy that could have disputes and be completely and totally 100% the adult in the room who didn't get angry or agitated over things that might make the normal person angry or agitated. And yet at other times, he was incredibly agitated over seemingly nothing at all. And it was just a question as to like which version and like what state of mind was he in. So I don't know if, yeah, I could see, I wonder if, I'd love to know what like Bob McNair and Bill O'Brien, if they ever butted heads. I could see Bob being a little, Bob had a way about him that was just super, super savvy and kind of like a way of just calling out BS.
Yeah.
With a little phrase or a question.
Yeah.
He'd be like, well, like, now exactly why would you think that?
yeah. So careful what you say. Think about your answer first. Let's head out to Tom's Watch Bar, where we'll find Landry Locker, John Lopez. That's where they're broadcasting from, 10 to 2. Tom's Watch Bar, 1201 Caroline. Let's talk with the guys. Crosstalk. What's the vibe out there like so far this morning, guys?
It's pretty nice. You can already see some Astros jerseys downtown. I think I've seen probably about 8 drunk people already making their way down there. It's I guess the streets open up at noon by the ballpark, and we're right here in the mix at Tom's Watch Bar, 1201 Caroline Street. They got some drink specials, and John Lopez is already partaking. So it's a very, very good day around here.
If I don't get Lopez shirtless with an A painted on his chest by the end of the show, it's an abject failure, Landry.
Oh, you mean again?
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.